Hi, everyone. For those of you who don't know me, but know all about my hairstyles, my name is Lisa Lorraine Smith. I'm the Chief Program Officer here at the network. And this affinity group, net group, we're calling them now, came about because during COVID, of course, food pantries really changed. You guys all hopped too. You were the saviors of all. And I give you all so much credit when I think about what everyone did, and people did a lot. I think those of you who worked in food pantries did the most, and you did it so quickly and so efficiently and on your feet. I'm just always so impressed. So I always want to just say that to you all. And we have two co-chairs. That's Jo Hickey. She is from JFS of Kansas City, and Beth Englezos from JFCS in Southern New Jersey.
No, Central, even though some people don't believe it. There is some place called Central. We're actually located in Princeton and serve Mercer County, New Jersey.
So Central Jersey. And I'm in Northern Jersey. And anyway, this is what they felt would be a good topic. And all I ask you to do is to put in your communities, which looks like everyone's done.
Oh, I will cancel
and
it then.
That's it. Here, I'll put you on mute there, Tracy. And I'm going to pass it over to Joe or Beth, who wants to start.
I can start. I think Beth, I don't know if that's... headset is working for her again, but want to welcome you all today. And mostly I think today we were going to talk about Passover, how it went, how each different group is serving the community. And I know there was some conversations going on about the Orthodox Union and that grant. So if we want to bring that into the conversation today, I think that would be a good idea as well. So Beth, do you have anything you would like to add?
Having computer problems today. I think also towards the end, we were going to talk about, I don't know whether Lisa mentioned this, I was having audio issues about talking about like some pantries, like going using more case management, if we have time for that. But yeah, I mean, if anybody has anything they want to share about Passover, I know that we are a strictly kosher food pantry that used to shut down over Passover. And we now remain open as very few of our clients that we serve through the food pantries are Jewish. And really, that philosophy sort of came from on our end. We work with a Muslim group here, and they serve prepared meals all throughout Ramadan. So mm-hmm. It's really a matter of who we're serving and not who we are, what we're serving ourselves. So we remained open this year, and we did serve, non-kosher for Passover food to people who did not observe Passover. So I wanted to know what other people did, what your feelings on that are.
And I wonder if there were challenges that people had to overcome and how you did it.
Am I here?
Leah, did you want to talk?
Yes, I have one challenge, and this is a problem of Tampa. I was able to get grants and I had money to purchase, but it's very difficult to find a lot of food kosher for Passover. Very limited supply of meat. It was a real issue. Our clients got dairy. We were able to do a lot of produce, more gift cards as opposed to pieces of foods that I really need. I have a lot of Holocaust, and that was a real challenge. Next year, I'm going to do it online. We have a new wish to be able to take care of that, and we're able to get other brands for Pesach early enough so they could be ordered. That was a real scrambling the day before that.
There was an article I sent around about that. People were saying they couldn't get kosher meat. They couldn't get kosher goods. It was a lot of supply issue. You're right, Leah. Whoops. I accidentally muted her.
We have a hard time getting it during the year as well. So I don't think it had anything to do with supply. It's difficult to get ahead of. And our costs almost doubled for the items that we needed. For example, we can get kosher meat at Trader Joe's. Their price was double what I had budgeted for it. Their briskets were $58 each as opposed to $25. That's huge.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. People were nodding. I'm not sure you can see. It sounds like you're driving. But...
No, I got lost. I can't see me. I just see some of you.
Okay.
So I saw someone earlier in the chat about the OU grant for Passover, and I don't even know. They said we might be I'm still not sure if we're getting it or not. It seems like it's a pretty select list and everything. But when we did speak to the representative from that about the grant, we had a few conversations with them about the difficulty getting food and how, like, in some ways, I think having an organization like the OU maybe help with purchasing power and things like that might actually be even more useful than like a small grant, at least for us. So I'm wondering if maybe we can get, like, I think they have a department that is supposed to be working with people like us, and maybe we can get a representative to come to one of these.
Yeah. We could.
They seemed really unorganized. I don't know if other people had that same experience, but we tried to email them and call them and fill out the form, and there was really no response. And it was maybe like 2 weeks before Passover when they finally sort of sent something, but not really, like nothing even concrete. And so I'm just wondering, you know, it seems like they would want to help, like kosher food pantries or food pantries associated with Jewish Family Service. So just curious if other people had experiences.
A few years ago, I know that they did have somebody dedicated working on an initiative to bring kosher food to food pantries. I don't remember her name. I don't know if anybody else does. She's no longer there. Okay, right.
Allison.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think they are working on that at this time. I couldn't give them a call, look into it and try to connect somebody. But I'm guessing that they are just like short staffed. And as far as purchasing power, you know, I think we all get our groceries sort of locally and our foods locally. I don't know how that would work. We did use a kosher food wholesaler, and they were experiencing some shortages, and the prices also were like through the roof. I mean, unbelievable. So I definitely will reach out to the OU and see what I can find. And I'll let, you know, Lisa know, and she'll let everybody else know.
And a couple of years ago, they did provide and say that they would send us product for Passover distribution, but ours came the day before Passover. So at that point, it wasn't very helpful. Is it after the fact, and things hadn't planned on buying on that inventory, but your observation has been my thought for the last couple of years as well, just that they're struggling with their own staffing and organization issues.
Marcy, did you want to say something?
Yeah, so I had filled out the form with them that I received, and I forgot to save a copy and my supervisor was not too happy with me. Anyway, so she asked me to try to contact them to get a copy of what I filled out. And I tried and I tried and I emailed and I called and I texted Rabbi Koresh. And I felt like I was nagging at him. Finally, he said, "I'll get back to you next week." Never got back to me. And then I heard through one of you that you got the grant. So I tried to reach out to him. My supervisor emailed him and said, "We never heard back from you. We don't even know if we're going to get the grant. Some people have already gotten the money. We haven't heard anything. We don't know anything." And then 2 weeks later, money showed up with no notification that we were getting it. And we're like, okay. And meanwhile, I never heard back from the guy. The rabbi. It was so unorganized. I was so displeased. It was so insanely, ridiculously unorganized. It was really bad.
But you can't plan. You can't plan. Right.
So that was number one. Number two, luckily, my husband opened a kosher grocery store last year in the middle of COVID in Rhode Island. So I've been able to piggyback on him for orders and to get meat and chicken. But I know that it's been really, really difficult. There's shortages everywhere. Egg matzah, forget it. Like I have a larger, older population who really like egg matzah because it's softer, could not get egg matzah. My husband couldn't even get it from the store. It was like just a train wreck, this whole thing. It was crazy. So I hear everybody.
One thing that might be worth just, I mean, some may know this and some may not. It is worth reaching out to your local synagogue that are OU members. What is happening on the other side is there are synagogues that pay hefty membership to the OU. All their members then got postcards saying we're raising money for the Maud Heaton campaign that's going to be providing food to local food pantries. That was the conversation we had where we kind of said, like, we're paying membership and our members are giving money to this campaign thinking that it's going to fund food pantries like ours, you know, would like to understand what this process is, you know, just, I think just thinking about where the power is in this situation and things like that is helpful. So if you don't, if you have anyone on your board, if you have any connections with any of the local Orthodox synagogues that are member agencies, it's helpful to have them also reach out, you know, and for next year, maybe a little bit advance, you know, in advance, not that we did that this time and we also haven't gotten funded, but that's kind of been our angle in these conversations going forward.
Yeah, sounds like a good plan. Did anyone have a successful Passover distribution?
Ours went just fine. We actually have a family that every year provides us funds to purchase Passover food, and we have volunteers come in and pack up specific Passover bags. But we too have been having trouble getting chickens or other kosher meat. So, but yeah, no, we had a very nice Passover. In fact, if anybody needs it, we have probably about an extra 30 pre-bagged Passover bags already. Uh-huh. And the donations from our community of their extra matzah and gefilte fish continue to come in. So we probably should look at the shelf life and just stash them for next year. Because really? We know it will taste exactly the same.
Yeah, that's right. A smart move.
That's what we do.
We don't, no, but right. We should.
No. Yeah, you really should.
I'm going to think about it, actually, now that I say it out loud.
I'm going to start selling matzah to other people for next year. We're getting lots of donations this week, yes.
Wait, what are you doing?
I'm going to start a matzah resale business from all of the donated matzah that we're getting now.
Seriously, are you joking?
I am joking. Now that I mention it, right?
Okay. So Miriam said, we have a Passover closet. About half of the inventory, it went so fast, is from the year before. Is that what you were saying? Yeah.
Yeah, we check expiration dates. Usually people are giving us stuff that they bought this year because, I don't know, I put away for next year, but a lot of people don't. So they're you know, the stuff lasts 2 to 3 years. So yeah. we put it all away.
Yeah.
I would, but I don't have the storage space.
That is something to consider. So does anyone else want to talk about Passover? That's it. It takes up all of our thought for months before, 10 days, and we gave it 15 minutes. That's it. No more. Goodbye. Good
I'll share.
Would have been a different discussion if it was a month previous.
Well, we thought about that, but it didn't happen for whatever reason. Next year. Leah, you wanted to say something? I'm sorry.
Yeah, one thing that we do a Chag Sameach for 6 major holidays. And again, a lot of the leftovers that I have from Pesach are used for Rosh Hashanah. Everyone will get gefilte fish and grape juice then. And for some reason, we have a very large, older Black women groups that love matzah. So come July and August, they are thrilled to pieces when they come to pick up their food I always have a table set out with different things, and they cannot get enough of it for whatever reason. It's like 50, 60, 70-year-old women that want 2-3 boxes each. I don't know.
Breadcrumbs.
I like matzo all year round.
I do.
I'd be one of those women.
It's just the thing. So, but a lot of the other products will go out for either the Shavuot Chag Sameach, or we'll keep for Rosh Hashanah.
Okay.
We are also giving out recipes for our, you know, non-Jewish population that doesn't know what to actually do with, you know, creative ways to eat matzah. So we are giving out some recipes when we put the rest of the boxes of matzah into our pantry bags for the next few weeks. So, and you know, I mean, who would think really to make pizza or matzah brei or a lasagna with it, but completely doable.
Okay. Does anyone else have anything they want to say on this topic? Should we move on to the other topic about case management? This is your group. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs I just up. Want to add one thing. I think I signed on a little late, but I think someone had asked about how you might sell stuff and stuff like that for Passover. If anyone is interested in our policies around that, on what we sell and how donations come in and the structure of the contract for selling chametz and all that, you can feel free to reach out to me. I'll drop my email in there. My husband's the rabbi of the synagogue here, and he sells our stuff, so we have it all kind of worked out. I'm happy to share just how we structure it.
Terrific. Do you get a lot of volunteers from that synagogue, the Rebbetzin?
Not as many as you would think. But,
I would think you would have a lot. I hear you. Okay. So,
well, Beth, if we want to switch to case management, I'd be happy to get us rolling. JFS Kansas City has been doing case management along with Food Pantry since it opened. It's just part of the process. And actually part of our intake. We're a really low barrier to service, so our guests don't have to show a proof of income or driver's license or anything like that. Just if somebody's coming and looking for food, then welcome to food. So we have a matrix of questions that we ask each family before they come to pantry. And it is part of the Arizona matrix. It asks about how they feel about their stability, if they feel stable in their housing, their income, medications, access to medical care. So there's this whole gamut of questions that we could potentially ask, but we've selected 5 areas. And they meet with a social worker either over the phone or now hopefully returning back to in person, and to have that conversation, because our goal is to help move our guests through that matrix, either through food security or through connecting with other resources. We call our social work program Kesher. I never say it right, but so, you know, meaning to connect. A lot of our guests are looking for assistance with medical care and prescriptions. And so that's something we worked really hard to get new relationships with, partnering with Kansas City Medicine Cabinet, and they provide eye glasses, dental care, and prescription at a very reduced rate to some of our families. And JFS actually receives a small stipend for referring people to them. After guests have that initial conversation, they have their appointment for pantry, and then they're set up ongoing for pantry services. But they will, that social worker will remain in contact with them for at least 3 months, or as long as they work to stay in connection with that social worker. We don't have a ton of money to help pay rent and utilities, but that is one benefit of being enrolled in the social work program, is when we do have those funds and have a working relationship with a staff member, you know, you're top of mind of when, you know, it's like, hey, this $50,000 came in, so-and-so is struggling with their utility bill. Let's pay that for them this month and then help them out. That gets recorded in a database in the Kansas City area so that we know what nonprofits are paying what for who, so that they're not asking JFS Kansas City and Catholic Charities to all pay the same bill in the same month. So that's our basic framework of our social work program.
I think that's great that you partner with doctors and optometrists and whatnot, you know, pharmacies and optometrists. That's great. At a low discount. I mean, everyone wants that. If only you could do it with dentist's offices.
Would you be able to send out that intake process or the questions you have? That would be really great to see.
Yeah, I tried to get Maggie, who she's in charge of our social work program, to be on the call today, but she's scheduled on vacation. I can.
If you send it to me.
I muted myself, yeah. I will talk about matrix questions and talk about our intake process. See if I can get just like a one pager of that information to.
And is it a designated social worker or is it any of the social workers on the team might take one of these clients?
It is any social worker on the team. So we have an older adult group that focuses on those 60 plus. We have additional services available to them, and they have, you know, expertise in Medicare and then aging in place as well. And then we have three other social workers who are for the remainder of the community.
And Joe, do you have clients who are like resistant to meeting with a social worker? Do they just want, you know, food and, you know, thank you, goodbye? Is it a requirement or?
No, it's not a requirement, but we do ask them to answer that questionnaire on that first visit, just to know the impact of even receiving food. And then there's some like kind of low key social work going on in the back end that they may not be aware of. Prior to COVID, you know, so many of our guests were reluctant to visiting a social worker because there can be such a negative connotation for the word social worker. It could be, you know, you're talking to the social worker at the hospital or, you know, your children are at risk of being taken away from you or, you know, your older adult, safety concerns. So we made it a process of when people came for their first appointment in person, they would sign in, they would meet, a volunteer would help them with their questionnaire, and then they would just pop in and say hi to Mosheed or Portia and just say, you know, like to take the opportunity. This is Portia. She's our social worker, you know, so that they can see that these are not scary people. They're people who look like them. And that brought down a lot of barriers. So people, you know, maybe on their first visit, they didn't have something, but the more they thought about it, they wanted to talk to somebody about how to get more affordable housing or working on a spending plan.
Joe, does your pantry operate on appointments?
We do.
Okay.
Other than, I will say, even on the days that we do curbside, we have an appointment, but it's a window. Our guests can come anywhere from 1 to 3 p.m. in that window so that it works best for them.
Also, you're in chat, in person, you're saying, or just the drive-through?
When
your client comes, like, they're the only one there?
There's usually a small overlap. So we schedule guests every 10 minutes.
Okay. How many clients do you serve?
We serve about 800 guests through a variety of sources. So we have two locations. So about 50% of our clients are in person right now. Some are curbside, some are delivery.
And that's 800 a month?
Mm-hmm.
800 households?
Households, yeah. And we are not strictly kosher, but we do have, one of our locations does have the Avod supervised kosher portion of the pantry.
And they just interact with the social worker that one time? Or
I mean, our goal is for them to continue socializing with the social worker, and we try to have somebody there every time that is a social worker. So if a conversation comes up, you know, my mother passed away yesterday and I'm still here trying to get food, you know, it's like, okay, what can we do to help soften that change for them? You know, is it connecting with mental health or our grief support, or giving them extra food or flowers that they can use as our families are coming together and they're trying to prepare meals? So we try to have a social worker around just to answer basic questions. But for most of the time, they're there just to make their next appointments and to be a familiar face.
And not to try to connect them with other services that JFS offers, or?
They do, but they really want the client to start the conversation, because we've found when things are like suggested to you heavily that people are less responsive and less open. You know, when we were advocating coming and making appointments to have COVID vaccines, people were really reluctant. But when the clinic, Casey Cares Clinic, was just there on Fridays, people would come naturally. It's just like, this is available to you if you want it. We had a lot warmer reception than if we just said, you know, oh, come talk to the social worker, she's here now. It was all in how it was presented. And I know each demographic is very different in how they are receptive to all sorts of different opportunities.
Thank you.
Is anyone else doing case management? Marcy?
How do you do it, Marcy? Sorry. Yeah.
We actually have a case management department in our organization. and they actually take care of it. So if somebody one of my customers says to me that they need help with finances or they can't cover their bills or something, then I would refer them to the case management department and then they would take care of it. So it doesn't directly affect me or the pantry, but also if I see something going on or one of my delivery people see something within somebody's house when they make a delivery, then I bring that to the case manager's attention. So it's within the organization, so it's not directly like through the pantry.
Do you know what percentage of your customers have case management services as well as accessing the food pantry?
Very few. It's really set up where they don't piggyback on each other. And I think that there are probably a handful out of the 120 families, I'd say maybe 5 or 6 of them actually use the clinical services within the organization.
And when you say you have case management within your agency, is that specific to any needs? Like by our JFSA, the case management department is mental health specifically.
Right. So
the extreme end of mental health.
Right. So they do financial assistance and mental health.
So then
they also help with if you can't find services or you need, you're looking for something specific, a specific type of doctor or a specific type of service, they'll help with those recommendations and referrals.
Mm-hmm. I was kind of wondering about that ahead of this meeting today is, you know, something that we've been kind of toying around with for a long time is whether case management is the appropriate term for what we think our clients need, or maybe they have here in the hospital systems, I don't know if they have this elsewhere, but like a patient concierge, where like if your doctor makes a referral for you, there's somebody you can call to help set up that appointment, as opposed to just calling central scheduling. And it's like a little bit more personal than just calling central scheduling. I'm wondering if that's a model that anybody has to kind of, I guess, if the food pantry is sometimes an entry point to other social services, and we're trying to look for a model that helps refer those clients that need other social services more smoothly into those other departments within the agency without putting a lot of, like, I liked Joe's term of a low barrier for service, without putting a lot on the front end so that those clients who just need food assistance or need to come for food assistance for 6 months before they're comfortable saying, yeah, I also need this service. But who's that person in the agency that's doing that handoff to mental health or to older adult services or to Meals on Wheels or whatever other services within the agency the client might need? I don't know if that was clear or not, but.
You want to know who is the point person to
How does that process? Does anybody have a process for that that works?
Beth does.
We do in Cincinnati. We have a part of our JFS agency is something called AgeWell Cincinnati, which is a resource for people to call when they need different help with different services. It's a one stop shop number. There's one main number to call with prompts telling them what they need if they're over 60, if they're under 60, if they are in need of mental health services, if they are part of our Center for Holocaust Survivors. It kind of gets fanned out to the right person. And that's how we pinpoint what their needs are, so we get them to the right provider for that sense. Because we have an aging services department, where we have separate programs for over and under 60. We also have where our food pantry is in the vital support center, where we have our care managers who handle more of our clients with mental health issues. And we have our Center for Holocaust Survivors. We have our Western Jewish Cultural Center. So there's all sorts of places where someone can get access to get the help they need. And while we're all different departments, we all work together. Our care managers, a lot of their clients do use the food pantry, but not all food pantry clients have a care manager. But if we find one needs the other, we can bring them together. So we have found that this AgeWell Cincinnati has been very helpful in getting people directly to the help they need, especially during the pandemic. And they just call the one number and follow the prompts. And there's someone who triages the calls and she sends them to the right department at JFS and we get them taken care of that way.
Mira, how many people work at your agency?
Cincinnati's on my list of places that I see and hear are doing wonderful things. And someday I'm going to get down there and see it in person. It's on my bucket list.
Come on, Mira.
I think it's Ohio, but it's not that close. It doesn't over, but I do plan to get there.
My question to you, Mira, is how many people are in your agency?
How many staff people are we?
How many staff? Mm-hmm.
Well, we, as the food pantry, we're just 2.5, 3.5 people, but we just became part of JFSA Cleveland, which is huge.
Well, then you'll be able to create
navigate that relationship. And the point of the merger was to help, you know, there be a seamless transition to the services that JFSA has to offer, and that people will, you know, hopefully extend the trust that they have in the Chesed Center to the other JFSA services. But it's, you know, a learning curve, and we're just trying to find the right model.
Erica, you were going to say something, weren't you, about your case management program. Sorry.
No, we're very similar to some of the others with case management through JFS, working with older adults and children as well, but that's separate from the pantry.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to chime in for a minute. I'm Gail. Sorry. I've been listening from my phone and I got home. So now I'm on my computer. But so I run the JFS in the Clearwater is our headquarters. So I'm in charge of 3 counties in our area. So it's Pinellas, Pasco, and Hernando counties.
Big.
And big. So it is, that I receive, I help Jewish clients. But we have what's called wraparound services. And so if somebody, a lot of calls get filtered through me, and I can contact our elder services program. I can contact other programs as well. But as far as my clients go, I help through our family services program just with case management. So for my clients, I manage the food pantry, but I also manage all of our program. So I'm managing over 200 clients and through the food pantry, through case management, through financial assistance, and so on and so forth. And we did have a counseling program at our agency, but that closed a couple of years ago. So, but we provide supportive services, which is not really counseling. So we have one person on board that if I have a client that really needs to talk to somebody that doesn't need mental health counseling, they can talk to her. Otherwise, I have to send them to other places. So I do a lot of referrals as well.
Sorry, I was just saying that's a lot of clients, 200 people to be in charge of. That's it.
Yes. Some people I see more than others.
Of course. Who did I cut off? I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, I don't know if this is helpful because it doesn't exist yet, but we're in the process of launching a new case management program. So I'll share a little more in a few months, but right now about half our clients are Holocaust survivors. So they're receiving, you know, extensive case management through our Holocaust survivor program. The other half are our families, many of whom started coming during COVID. So we are launching a case management program that's going to be focused on increasing self-sufficiency. It will also be using the Arizona Matrix of Self-Sufficiency or portions of it. But the idea of it will be to work with certain clients in the food pantry. It won't really be for everyone, but certain families who are in kind of complicated situations that have the potential to be worked through. You know, they've got barriers toward increasing their income, like transportation or childcare or whatever it is. And someone will work with them at addressing those. You know, similar to some of how the TANF program works for those of you who have that, but geared toward people at a little bit of a higher income level. You know, and getting people who are underemployed either higher income jobs or more work. And so the target audience is some of those food pantry clients who only started needing us because of a crisis, who haven't been chronic, you know, had chronic needs, as well as we would like to also work with people in the community who don't yet need the food pantry, but are kind of in that one crisis away from being in a dire situation. So the program will be, you know, kind of starting small scale, but working on, you know, case management with that, you know, it's not generalized case management, it's with a specific goal, but it's toward the idea of, you know, kind of addressing some of the causes rather than the symptoms of food insecurity. So it's launching in the summer, so I'll keep you posted.
Definitely.
Exciting. Sounds great. Please do.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Is that from a grant? Like, did you request?
Yeah, so we received seed funding from a private family foundation of a family who lives in our community, and that will fund about half of the program, which we're going to be working on fundraising the rest, and that's about 3 years of funding. We'll see what happens. You know, our hope is to be able to show that, you know, we're getting these people out of needing our services, and kind of obviously the overall financial benefit to the community of doing that, and that we'll be able to, you know, have a sustainable fundraising model around that. But it was an initial grant. Though what we found when we've been having conversations with other donors about this, you know, the idea of not just giving people food and addressing some of, you know, the deeper issues is very appealing to people. You know, so I do think, you know, as you. Yeah, as very appealing to funders, you know, and they're interested in hearing about that and in funding that. And there are a lot of ways to prove the value of it in ways that more business-minded people kind of relate to. So, you know, because the case management has a financial value when you increase someone's income. So, I mean, you know, we've had success with raising money for it.
I'd be curious to speak offline about what your benchmarks are and what you're looking to, how you're going to measure your success. Because that's something really hard in this setting, you know.
Well, I think that's an interesting question. I don't know if people here are raising money and if they have benchmarks, how they, you know, get their money, so, you know, from funders. They're saying that they're going to lift, you know, 80 people out of poverty. I mean, I don't know, what do people say? Does anyone talk like that in your grants?
In general, you're saying not really.
Because that's what Robin Hood Foundation, that's all they want to hear, right? These corporate funders. They want to hear how you're getting people out.
Yeah, we focus primarily on the food aspect, and now funders want to hear about nutrition, and rather than food security, it's nutrition security. So our funding is really primarily for food. And it's nice to hear from Miriam and anyone else that funders are interested in the social service aspect of it. Although, again, you know, food is what we are being funded for, what corporations, I hate to use the word, but find sexy, and it's more tangible. So we say that our matrix is that we're increasing food and nutrition security. But I would love to, you know, eventually offer more case management services. So I might, you know, call on you separately to find out more about it and get your intake forms. Right now it's like, hello, I need food. Can I make an appointment? And they make an appointment to get food.
I do think funders like to hear about counseling services too. And
I think there are
you might be able to get more money. I'm not saying that, you know, if you add that in, but every community is different.
I think that it's hard though. Because sometimes, you know, funders like new and sexy, but they don't like, you know, now that you have the program up and running, sometimes it can be hard with some funders to get the continued funding for the things that you set up. Yeah. And I know as far as measurement goes, I mean, the Arizona self-sufficiency matrix has been mentioned, which is a great one to use. It's like tried and true. But the other thing, like we notice with older adults, is I'm always like, you know, aging has one trajectory. And it's kind of like this. So like, if you're trying to measure success with an older adult, like you have to be careful of the benchmarks that you mentioned, because they're aging. And some of these things are just normal with aging. But yeah, I mean, and we do, we offer, you know, we consider the food pantry to be a horizontal service throughout the whole JFS, you know, Ann Arbor, that because we have a lot of different programs that we offer, counseling, older adult services, refugee services, and like the food pantry is the one thing that crosses everything. So we do a lot of like, you know, a lot of case management with our clients.
But you do case management with your clients. And when you're raising money, do you talk about how you reach all the different populations that you work
with? We do, but it's hard. Like, so our older adult funding, you know, we serve obviously, you know, the Jewish population, but we also serve the population at large. And so some of that funding is tied to a program that we have, and that program is winding down. And it's getting the funders to see that there was, you know, and that's why you have to have measurements. It's getting the funders to want to support something that's ongoing, as opposed to like the brand new thing that we're doing that's going to be so different. So, yeah, but other things are more like contracts, like the refugee work, that's contract with the State Department. That's kind of ongoing, but some of the other kind of new innovative things can be a little bit harder to keep going. So you try to look for payers and stuff like that. So.
That's why God made different kinds of funders, like to fund different things. Like you definitely have your funders, like your older crowd, maybe like who are nearing retirement or retired, like to give money for food. But your young entrepreneurs like to give money to see you put people in jobs, and then they can buy their own food. And then you have like, you know, the people who are, like you're saying, entrepreneurial themselves and like to see new things get started up. And hopefully you have the ones who are willing to be patient and see the benefit and then want to keep it running. So you got to have multiple
Well, tentacles.
Stories you can tell that tempt different people to support your work. But.
So true. So true. So we heard from everyone. Did we hear from Margate, Vanessa, or Sandy in Greater New Haven, or Raleigh, Tracy? Anything you want to tell us?
Nothing that hasn't been said already. We are a social service. Sorry, this is Vanessa from Margate. We are a social service agency, so case management is very much integrated into our services. So it is very easy to make referrals if a volunteer or the volunteer team notice some concerns and have someone reach out if need be. Our Passover program is very small here. So we were able to meet the need with a drive. So local people donated, and then we were able to get it out to the people that needed it.
Vanessa, do you oversee the referrals in your role?
No. Yes, if they are receiving some type of food only services.
Yeah.
Yes, I would be taking part in referring them to another program. Yes.
So, Mayor, that's what I'm thinking. You would be that person, just like Gail's that person in your new role with JFSA in Cleveland. You would probably be doing that. So you should reach out to Gail when you get a chance. Pick her brain.
I'm figuring out what I'm supposed to
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely. I've been around 10 years.
Yep.
Our agency.
I've been around 5, but everything got flipped on its head. So I'm still learning what's expected of me now that there's a whole back office to do fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
And payroll and
lucky you.
Billing and everything else that I was doing before. So,
Tracy, you want to tell us anything?
A wild ride.
Make one comment about counseling, because really our agency was founded on a counseling center back in the 60s. And it really evolved, and our agency grew and grew and grew over the years. And between refugee services and counseling, it just started to expand. And then we got a lot of funding for children programs. So we have a very large children's program at our agency. It's a huge agency. And JFS is only about 1 or 2% of that, of a $4 million agency. So I guess through the board and whatnot, several years ago, they decided that they were gonna close the counseling center program and just have counseling in these individual programs, like through Elder Services or through the Holocaust program, or whatnot. And the Jewish community at large, I think, was really disappointed because of the fact that it was part of our founding roots. But I'm not part of the leadership team. So I think that just through the leadership and the board, it wasn't making money, it wasn't managed properly or whatever, you know, through the years, or I don't know exactly, but we've managed to get through it all. And
we've got a really large foster child program.
Yes.
Right. So you make a lot of money through that. And strategically, it didn't cost the agency too much money to continue to do counseling when there were other agencies in your communities that did counseling, but there weren't very many that were doing foster care placement, because that's one of the hardest things to do of any of the kinds of programming that we all do at JFS agency.
So that's why we don't have a program that's dedicated to counseling, but we still provide some sort, whether it's outreach somewhere else,
right?
Just through
case management. Gail, let's hear from Tracy and Sandy before we have to end. I just
want to
have an opportunity to talk.
I could go real quick. This is Sandy from JFS New Haven. It's funny that you mentioned foster care, because we just ended our foster care contract with the state of Connecticut, and also our permanency planning. And those programs have been around before I started, and I started almost 25 years ago.
Yeah.
So those are two major programs that we just ended in 2021. As for the pantry, currently we have, I think, 260 people who are registered to come in on a monthly basis for supplemental food. We do a brief intake when they come in, and I'm the one who basically does that. And we ask, but we get a lot of reluctance the minute we mention a social worker. Mm-hmm. Once the clients warm up to us, we do refer them upstairs. So we could either refer them to our aged program, our mental health and counseling program, or our SOS program, which kind of offers all those wraparound services. So in other words, if someone needed referrals or help with housing, or, you know, they might have a one-time medical thing they might need, like help with dentures or eyeglasses or, you know, sneakers because they have bunions, whatever it might be. That's our SOS program. And then as for who our clients are, I would say we're probably 46% of our clients are Russian Jews who resettled in the 80s. And the rest are just clients who are not Jewish. We have the huge Russian population. And we also, some of our clients piggyback with our Holocaust program. So we work with JFS of West Hartford with our Holocaust program. And some of those clients do use the pantry, but not all of those clients.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. And is your role in charge of the pantry?
I'm coordinator of agency operations, half-time, and then half-time for the food pantry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the only paid person for the food pantry at this point. It's run pretty much all volunteers. We have been pre-packed personalized bags since COVID started, and mm-hmm. we're not back to in-client or clients inside yet shopping.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when we're going to go back to that at this point.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Tracy, anything?
So we are a relatively small operation here. We have a staff of 8 ladies, and a few of them, we're all part-time, 4 of which are social workers that do all of our intakes. It is done by a social worker just to see if someone does present with only having food insecurity, if there are other needs. For example, like I heard before, older adults. We do have an older adult social worker who works with the 60 plus community. It is a volunteer run food pantry. We have volunteers that come in once a week to prepare bags. We only have, well, tomorrow we only have 25 people receiving bags. The number goes up and down depending, because we do deliver every week. We have 2 clients that pick up at this point. Prior to pandemic, clients would come to our office, but because of pandemic, we rely more heavily on volunteers who make all of our deliveries, and it's a really good operation. We're all donation-based. We do have some grant funding. We primarily serve only the Jewish community, so we can boast that we are a kosher pantry. With that, I mean, it is supervised and we keep it all separate, and we don't distribute at any cost pork or shellfish. We still get it though. It's really funny. So we're partnered with the Food Bank of Central and Eastern North Carolina, where we can receive and purchase food at a very reduced rate. And then we give food back if we do receive donated items that we can't distribute.
Tracy, I want to ask a question, and I know we have to wrap up. You said something interesting that I don't think anyone else here said. You have a barrier to people getting the food. They have to be seen by a social worker before they receive their food.
They do have to have a formal.
That's different than a lot of people here.
Mm-hmm. And that might be because we are so small and don't have funding for another staff person to be the intake person. Mm-hmm.
What Joe was saying is that they don't really have an intake. They just let people come in, right? Oh, you do have an intake? Oh, you did.
Yeah, it's really informal. Okay. We asked like 4 or 5 questions off of the Arizona self-sufficiency matrix.
Oh, wow.
And then that and we collect some a little bit of personal information, but we don't ask them to verify income or driver's license or anything like that.
Right.
Where some places do.
Mm-hmm. A lot of places
do. We only ask for demographic information to verify that the income is under a certain, the food bank's cut off and that they live within the Greater Cleveland Food Bank service.
But everyone gets the name and the address of the person who comes through.
All the household.
And the household information, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, we're a holistic agency, so we all work very collaboratively. The nice thing about having volunteers do the deliveries is because we can't keep eyes on the clients all the time, is they do connect with me. I heard that mentioned before too. If a client says they need something, right, you know, we can connect them with the social worker. And the objective obviously is to have them be self-supporting eventually, right? Just like with therapy.
Right, so, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But that's mine in a nutshell. So thanks for letting me share.
Yay. So I wanted to just say before everyone gets off the phone, off the call, that we have our conference and some of you I think are going to be there, which is really exciting, in Minneapolis in 2 weeks. Oy vavoy, May 15th to the 17th. And we're really looking forward to that. We have a few, Beth, are you sharing? Are you doing something in the program showcase? Are you coming, Beth? I think someone from your agency might be.
Michelle Nepel is, yes.
Yeah.
So I was going to go, but my kids are coming home from college then. So
anyway, there's going to be this program showcase. There's a lot of different kinds of programs using volunteer engagement. I think there are a few food programs as well. We're going to be offering that in the fall for free again online, so people can attend, which will be nice. Joe, are you going? You're going, right? No, you're not going either. Well,
no.
Is anyone going? Miriam, are you going?
I'm going. Yeah. I'm going. I booked like last week, but I'm going.
Okay. Anyone else on the call going? Well, I'll see you there. And maybe next year you guys can try to come, because I think it'll be a lot of fun. And I think we're going to learn a lot, and it'll be good to be in person. So that was my big plug. And when is our next meeting? Do we know? Oh, it's always pop up. So we never know, right? But I don't know. Beth, Joe, do you want to have an ending or say anything?
Well, if anybody has any ideas for meeting topics, or if anybody knows a speaker who they think would be interesting for everyone to hear, let, you know, Lisa know about that, and we can try to get something on the calendar with that.
Yeah, that would be great. Really, let us know if you want to talk about something. This conversation came up out of an email that you guys sent around. So don't be strangers. This group is for you. And I guess that's it, right? Everyone have a wonderful spring, and we'll hope to see you in early summer or so.
Thanks. Okay. Good luck at your conference.
Thanks, everyone.
Take care. Thank you. I need
Bye-bye.
It. Bye. Bye.